just different ends of it, right? So what was the lessons that you learned from that?
Well,
I can remember some scars for sure, but what was the lessons you learned from that?
Well, there's probably two of them. Hello and welcome to episode 209 of the Rockstar CMO Effing Marketing Podcast. It's Saturday the 16th of March. Hope you had a good week. Apologies for the delay getting this to you. As you'll hear, I've been travelling. I'm your host, Ian Truscott. I'm not a rock star, but I'm a three-time CMO and trusted marketing advisor. And with the help of my chums, share this marketing street knowledge that I hope will inspire your inner rock star. Come say hello. You can find links to me and my guests in the show notes at rockstarcmo.com or on LinkedIn at rockstarcmo. And we are proud members of the Marketing Podcast Network. This week in the Marketing Studio, Jeff Clark and I share some hard knocks learned from MarTech implementations gone bad. And in the Rockstar CMO virtual bar, I'll join Robert Rose for a cocktail and thoughts about doing more with less and, of course, AI. But first, we need to pay the bar tab. I'll be back in a moment.
We'll be right back.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Right, it's time to drop in on my free consultation with our resident strategy advisor, former Forrester Research Director Jeff Clark in our marketing studio.
Hello, Ian. How are you doing today? And why don't you step on into the Rockstar CMO studio?
I'm doing great. Thank you, mate. Thank you for welcoming me to the studio. I am actually not in the studio, though, am I? I'm traveling.
You're remote today.
I am remote, which might be why the microphone or the sound might sound a bit different, but I'm hoping I can clean this all up in the post-edit. So, yes, I am remote today. And how is sunny Massachusetts?
It is sunny.
Nice.
And it's warm. Mm-hmm. It's almost, I wouldn't say summer temperature, but it's certainly a springtime temperature. Mm-hmm. And certainly, as you showed me the weather outside your window of the South English coast, it's nothing like what you're experiencing.
No, we've got rain again, I think for the third week in a row. I'm complaining about the rain, so we've got a rain shower passing through, but I think it's gonna be maybe just cloudy later. Maybe it won't be sunny because it's gonna get dark in a minute, so that's that. So yes, I am down in Bournemouth, so yeah, I'm by the coast today. So that's the weather. That's sorted out. So this week, as promised, in fact, I promised this not just last week. I promised it the week before, but then we got a bit distracted with that work that you did.
We finally get around to it.
Yeah. But it was a good interruption, though, wasn't it? So because we've posted your MarTech assessment stuff onto the website. So if people did hear last week, so they're interested, take a look. And we've got a little downloadable PDF with your program all in it. We talked about it in the newsletter as well. Yep. If people are interested in joining our newsletter, that's all on the website as well. So anyway, so I'm back to promoting your work again. But this week, we've done a lot of episodes on best practices for acquiring and managing marketing and sales technology. Both of us, well, me more especially, are slightly biased towards MarTech, right? So we're always talking yep. about it. But what maybe the listener may or may not know is that that advice comes from lessons hard learned. In fact, I would probably call them F-ups and the hard knocks of MarTech, if you will. So, and I know that you've prepared some obvious ones, particularly from the client work you've done most recently and what it is that we need to look out for. And I'm absolutely delighted this week you've come up with five. So you've come up with 5 effing hard knocks, I guess.
That's right. And if we went to 6, we'd go way over time. We'll have to leave another 5 for the future.
But it's a good set, having done a little bit of work research before I hit record. So it's a good set. So we'll kick off with those. So what's your first hard knock, Martech hard knock?
The first one, actually, I have a couple that kind of relate to a big project that incorporated a number of different issues. But the first one is called the process misfit. Mm-hmm. So, have you ever gone through a long, complex implementation on, like a key system that everyone touches, like a CRM, but then nobody's using it? And I have done that. So I was involved in replacing a bespoke, custom developed, full feature yet expensive to maintain CRM system using our own development tools at one company I work with, and we were going to replace it with the industry standard, which at the time was called Salesforce.com. Now just called Salesforce. They dropped the .com part because it wasn't cool anymore.
Yeah.
And when we did it, part of selling it internally was we're going to install the out of box instance because they've got a process down, and so what really was difficult was sort of the orchestrating the switchover. So moving data, getting people. It was a company that did work in 30 some different countries. Mm-hmm. So that's complex in and of itself. And the problem was that the out-of-the-box processes didn't fit how sales and marketing, but mostly sales, operated.
Right.
So, it was like, we had to craft new lead and opportunity flows that worked for us and kind of encode that in Salesforce. Mm-hmm. And so therefore the go live, wasn't, I don't remember the exact dates, but, add at least a year, at least 12 months onto what the original go live was.
Yeah.
Cause that was a lot of work.
Yeah,
that was a lot of work to make it fit the processes. And then, in the interim, you're back using your old bespoke system and
every
having
day
the other one just sitting there.
The migration problem continues, right? It just,
the migration problem continues and you're probably paying for licenses you're not using. And
But that's interesting because I think a lot of the time, particularly with marketing technology, there's an argument at the moment where we've actually changed our processes in order to fit the software, haven't we? So I think this is interesting, this whole topic of process misfit, isn't it? It's like, well, do you invest in all of this effort to implement the product as your organization works, or do you change your organization to work with the product, right? And I think we get accused in marketing of changing our process to fit the product, don't we?
Yes. And that gets us to our lesson learned, which we basically, you either have to use the product as designed out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not this is not a either or, it's this one way or the other, because I think it with like a CRM system, it can be kludgy when you've got complex cross-functional processes that you need to configure into the system that work for you. I mean, just every company operates differently. And so this is one of those areas where I'd say, you really got to make sure the product will enable you to fit your process to it, or you revise your process so it works together. Mm. But you got to come to something that's going to work for the organization. Because if it doesn't, then your adoption is going to be in the trough.
Zero. And you're right. And I also think that adoption is when I've represented vendors and when you're working with a customer as a vendor, adoption will kill an implementation of your software, and if the users don't like it and don't take to it, it's only a matter of a time before they figure out a way of getting out of it and getting something else in, isn't it? It's such a key
getting around it
in adoption within,
particularly
today's SaaS world, isn't it? Where you need adoption is so key. So that was the lesson learned, was it? That you use the product as designed, or configure the system to your processes. And allow the time,
And I think the thing is, you got to, which a lot of companies don't I mean, they don't actually try to document and and go through the input cycles on what the process should be. Because obviously this is an opportunity to improve processes.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
But when you've had something that's bespoke, custom designed to work the way you want it to work, and then you like pull that out, you can't just assume that out of the box is going to work for you. You've got to actually document it. You've got to make sure that you can come to some more optimal process that can be configured in whatever you're purchasing.
Yeah. And I think we're in danger there with one of our rabbit holes, isn't it? I think that whole process conversation about reviewing that is probably a whole podcast in itself. So what's your second?
The second one, which is kind of step two to the first project or the project I was just talking about, is it looks nice, but how does it work? So even though let's say we've redesigned our lead and opportunity flow to fit our current business processes or our new business processes, the users need to know how to use it. So as I've always said, you're not going live until people know how to use it.
Yeah,
so adoption is still going to be abysmal, even with an updated product. So you've got to entrain the sales team, you got to train the marketers how to use the system, and provide your own users guides, whatever it takes. It's just not going to be there until you.
We actually did that as part of pre-sales with one organization that I worked for, a WCM organization, and we helps support the rollout team with a roadshow to show them how new product works and stuff. They even had a little pop-up in their reception where people who dealt with content could come by and see the product. There was members of the vendor on available, right? And I think that adoption thing is often forgotten, isn't it, in a project that I think the vendor should lead in and give a bit of and invest in that process too, right? Because ultimately that's going to be their success too, isn't it? So what's the lesson that you've learned from that one?
So the lesson learned is that system is not truly live until people know how to use it, and the processes are defined, it's documented, you've done training, and now it's like, okay, now we can get, even though you're not going to get 100% adoption out of the gate, you need to put everything in place that will get you to 100% adoption, and then say, okay, now we're live. And of course, live, I mean, the thing could literally be live in that it's on the network accessible and stuff like that. But in terms of like where you're really trying to say, where we're putting our stake in the ground that says, here's where we're starting, and now we're going to track adoption, going forward from that.
Yeah.
This is probably true of almost every product out there, any technology, is that, you can't. If you shortchange training, then you're basically shortchanging your ability to get adoption.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're the first two. And I quite like those first two because they're about the process of the implementation and allowing extra time to understand and manage the process. And then the third one is to encourage adoption and make sure that the users are trained. What's your third?
The third is the data misfit. Uh-huh. So we had the process misfit. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to have a data misfit. Mm-hmm. So kind of related to the project that I was talking about with the first two, is that there was a marketing automation system. So we had a bespoke marketing automation system, did everything, list management, email marketing, web process tracking, and it was expensive to maintain. And we're getting rid of all the ties to the Salesforce automation part. So we went out to buy a new marketing automation system. And we went through, we had a consultant, we went through the traditional extensive RFP process. This may sound dated because tools like Eloqua were kind of nascent at the time, and Marketo and Pardot didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And, and certainly there were other things out there. So, but we did a process and we bought the leader in the market, and I won't name product names because I don't want to besmirch what is probably one of the current leaders in the market anyway. But it was, the challenge was, and this was, I mean, there's a couple aspects of the Misfit. It was actually a product that was designed to do campaign management automation for the consumer market. Right. So a B2C product. And the challenge there is, and this is true anytime you take something from the B2C world and you move it into the B2B world, is that their idea of an account is a contact.
Yep.
It's one person. Yep. So the data model is totally built around that very simple concept. Yep. And so when we say, okay, so we want contacts to be associated with multiple contacts to be associated with account, because that is how B2B purchasing happens. Mm-hmm. And the company at the time wanted to transition into the B2B market, and they said, well, we'll build it. Mm-hmm. We'll fix it. I mean, we'll not fix it. We'll make it work. And, you know, over some time, we were willing to wait. And part of the other reason is that the company offered other modules that the CMO at the time was interested in getting into, you know, budgeting and planning and other things that were part of their suite. And, So the problem was that they couldn't make that transition at that time. And so we got a version which didn't work. Then they fixed it and that didn't work. And then they again, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
And you know, by the time you go through this process, and, you know, I was involved with calls with the CEO of the company and the head of services and support. And it was just like, it was like, I mean, talk about hard knocks. This was like a absolute nightmare. And it's like your reputation internally is like totally on the line. Yeah. And I believe the company ended up, although it was a little bit after I had left, ended up switching to Eloqua because over the period of time, Eloqua made leaps and bounds in development of their product.
Yeah.
So it was.
I've been there.
This was the hardest of hard knocks.
Yeah, and I've been there. I mean, like, I'm relatively recently when I was a CMO over at Zenshare. I think we've talked about it on the show before, where the marketing automation solution was focused on individuals and leads, and we were trying to do opportunities and map opportunities and do things at an opportunity level, which I'm sure you would approve of from your Forrester days. So we were trying to do that, and the CRM was jiving with it, but we just couldn't get them. You know, it was hard for us, and then map it all up together. So I think that problem may still exist that you're talking about there. So what was the lesson learned from that, then, Jeff?
The lesson learned is, I mean, data is so important. I mean, it is your most valuable resource after your people in an organization. And so the tech has to fit the way you're going to create, store, utilize data. So the application you buy or you know, subscribe to may be, it may not be central to your data repository like a CRM or marketing automation system is, but even if it's feeding or relying on the data from those central repositories, it's got to work with the data model you have. And so there's no sense kidding yourself that you can make it work, because sometimes, you know what, you just can't make it work.
Well, that's the thing with the data model, isn't it? Because it's so fundamental to the product, isn't it?
And the way your business operates.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, there are our top three. So, quite like they fit together really nicely, don't they? You've got your processes, you've got your data, and you've got your adoption. What's your fourth, Jeff?
The fourth is use cases are for users. At least that's my short word for this problem is that. So, the particular instance was required a content marketing system to, you know, create and automatically post blogs to our website.
Right.
And it was very well suited for that as opposed to what our content management system at the time was. Mm. And this is at a company that you and I both know well, or knew well. And it worked great for that process, it's got a workflow of people creating content, approving content, storing content, posting content, integrated with the web content management system. But the problem was, you know, when you buy something for a use case, but your intent is that there are other use cases, right? So that product could easily have been used for creative services to do their content workflow. Could have been used in, you know, because one of your, and there certainly were multiple, but sources of content coming in, product marketing, first and foremost, but, you know, corporate comms, et cetera. It's like, okay, so each of those have their own use cases for how they're going to develop, review, post content, how they're going to store it internally. Mm-hmm. And when you, as we were kind of going through the other, you know, these other groups and these, which have these unique use cases, it's like, everyone was like, I don't know. Why would I change what I'm doing now? Mm-hmm. I'm not particularly interested, you know, and there were likely have going to be some, as I remember, some customizations, but you know, nothing major like we've just talked about before, yeah. But still minor things. And it's just, you know, nobody was particularly interested. And so it's like then something that has potentially good value for the organization and certainly had value for one use case, it just kind of stopped there. Yeah. And it's tough, you know, something like content marketing or, you know, any kind of process automation, it's got to touch multiple people. These tend to be cross-functional processes. So yeah. You've got to go through it.
Is that the lesson learned? And what's the lesson learned from this one?
Yeah, I think when buying tech, you've got to go through all the potential users and build and document what those use cases are. Right. Even if you create a use case that you may never get to, but you've at least gone through that process so you know what the roadmap is.
Yeah.
Yes, I did step ahead of myself a little bit in my notes because I said, you know, any cross-functional tech, content marketing, process automation, CRM, marketing automation, to a certain extent, or depending on how you use a web content management system or CMS or a DAM, they may be also a digital asset management system. They also might apply there is like, you know, you got to think about the diversity of users and what the use cases are and make sure that the product not only fits that when you're purchasing it, but you're doing the planning ahead, kind of building, you know, we often talk about a roadmap for your MarTech stack. Yeah. Well, within that, every product will typically have a roadmap too in terms of how you get to its full utilization and adoption.
Yeah, and it sounds like in that case, right, is that there was a group of people that had one use case and the product was bought as a broader platform. And then, you know, great, it's fantastic, but it never got the rollout. So it never, I guess, achieved the ROI you were expecting from the tool in the first place, right? Oh, this is all very well published in blog posts, but yeah.
And you got to go talk to the people before you purchase it. I mean, how you build a use case, and you know, should have mentioned this, is how you build a use case is you go talk to the users.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Then they're prepped.
Yeah, cool. So so what's your fifth then, Jeff? We're coming up to the last one.
The fifth one, this is the one I like the phrasing for the best. Drinking your own champagne can cause hangovers.
Yeah.
So, you know, earlier I mentioned issues with bespoke, you know, custom developed solutions. However, if your company has the ethos to use its own products to prove the value to the world, you've got to watch out. Mm-hmm. So, and again, this is one we're both familiar with because we worked at a company that had one of the industry leading web content management systems, sophisticated. They had recently added targeting personalization functionality, which we wanted to demo on our website. It's like, we want to be able to do this so we can show the world how easy it is or even that it's possible. And the problem was we were not the typical customer, you know, and we hadn't developed the internal processes, the data model to support advanced targeting and personalization. So we had a 10-person, you know, development team customizing the heck out of the out-of-the-box product to enable it to do what we wanted to do. And then meanwhile, we're going to, my role, because the web team kind of reported up to me, so I and the head of the web team would go around and say, okay, how are we going to implement content personalization for your audience, you who are selling localization, or you who are selling the content management solution itself, or you who are selling our marketing solution. And, you know, it was just,
Yeah.
It was a bear.
Yeah, yeah.
It just wasn't.
I was there.
And we were trying to do something we weren't made to do.
Completely agree. And I think that's the mistake that companies sometimes make, isn't it? Is the product that they market and sell, maybe an enterprise product, which is what the situation was in this case, right? And you're not the ideal customer profile for that product. You just happen to produce it and sell it, right? And so trying to implement an enterprise solution into a mid-market company is always going to run into trouble. And the other problem, I think, back then, because it is an experience we both shared, was that because of the enterprise nature of the tool, the services were more expensive. And the whole thing was a much bigger, meatier project than it really needed to, both in terms of time and cost, right? So, yeah.
And when we went to our services organization to help us,
they're busy.
They were like, we're busy and we're getting paid to do things and you're not going to pay me. Yeah. You know, you might do some internal cross charge and that doesn't really help me. And then they said, and by the way, some of our best customers don't have their shit together. I apologize for my language. They don't have their shit together to actually use the features that we're talking about and telling them to do. I mean, so it's in their roadmap, but they're not there yet. I'm like,
Then personalization was always, next phase with the customers, right? And then as a vendor, you've got to try and show them. So, and I've got a similar example, actually, the other direction, where there was a vendor that I worked with that was selling a simpler solution for a small business kind of thing, and then trying to use that for their sort of marketing, all of their marketing, and that didn't work either, right? Because it wasn't sophisticated enough of what you needed from a B2B marketing perspective. It was more of a sort of a consumer newsletter solution, and you're sort of like hamstrung in a similar way, but the same problem, just different ends of it, right? So what was the lessons that you learned from that? I can remember some scars for sure, but what was the lessons you learned from that?
Well, there's probably two lessons learned here. So one is make sure your sales and marketing tech fits you as a customer, and don't stretch it beyond the intended use cases, because the customization, the adoption, the internal nightmares just will fester.
Yeah.
The other lesson learned is, which is a tough one, is you gotta be able to know how to tell the CEO or whoever is intent that you use our own, eat our own dog food, drink our own champagne. It's like, sorry, this isn't going to work. And if you want me to make it work, it's going to take me away from actually doing marketing.
Well, I think it's a bit of a catch-22 situation, isn't it? You have to use the product. The problem with those projects is that they require an enterprise level of investment as well as being an enterprise level of sophistication, right? So yes, for some reason, we believe that we're getting the product and the services for free and then we can get it done. No, you need to cost all of that out, right, properly, as if it was being done by an external agency, and then decide whether this is the right thing to do, right? And if you're going to get the return.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And actually in the reality of the web content management example that we're talking about, is we were using the product and we just weren't using it to the extent that they want us to be able to demonstrate these things. Yeah. So we basically were using it, but not taking full advantage of all of its features. We were certainly taking advantage of its localization capabilities, but not in terms of targeting personalization. Yeah.
It's such an interesting topic as well, because in certain situations you don't have a choice. I mean, the problem is what if somebody found out we were using a competitor's product? Well, it's not really a competitor's product, because it's not in the market that we're selling into, right? So that's the tricky thing. So that was is that the lesson learned? Then we covered that, didn't we?
Yes.
That you need to fit you as a customer. So that's your five. So that's excellent. So I love those five, and I'll just recap. So your first hard knock was the process misfit. Your second one was looks nice, but how does it work? Third one, the data misfit. The fourth one, where's the fourth one? The use cases are for users. And the fifth one, drinking your own champagne can cause hangovers. Thank you very much, Steph. And presumably we might pop that out as a blog post or something at some point.
That would actually would make a good podcast.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm glad that we were able to share this, and that maybe this provided some therapy for you, Jeff. You've obviously been carrying these around for a while. So.
I've been carrying getting the monkey off my back.
Yeah, all right, so the final agenda item, and I don't know whether we're agreed on this. I think we might be. What's the song you're suggesting?
I'm going to suggest, or you suggested the Hard Knock Life, which Jay-Z. Was Jay-Z's, his version of the classic from Annie.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't remember when he released his version.
Yeah,
it's kind of comical and fun. Yeah. And hey,
we're going to play out with
it's
that.
Like you learn from the Hard Knocks.
Oh, wow. We'll play I out thought with you were going to pick something else. So yes, excellent. So we'll play out with Hard Knock Life by Jay-Z, and we'll... And I think last week we didn't get the year in either, so we're lacking here. So, all right, mate. And then are you in the studio next week? Because I'll be back from my travels.
Yes.
Excellent, man. I'll see you then.
See you then.
Cheers.
Another bump. Bye-bye. On the corners rockin', to driving some of the hottest cars New Yorkers ever seen, for dropping some of the hottest verses rappers ever heard, from the dope spot with the smoke block singing the murder scene. You know me well from nightmares of a lonely cell, my only hell, but since when y'all know me to fail, nah, we all my with the rubber grips, or shots, and if you with me, mama, rubber your... And whatnot. I'm from the school.
Thank you, Jeff. And that was a tiny bit of Hard Knock Life from Jay-Z. And I was surprised to discover that it's actually from 1998. And as you heard, Jeff will be publishing those Hard Knocks in a blog post. And the best way to be notified when that drops is to sign up for our newsletter on rockstarcmo.com. Right, it's that time of the week to wind down in the Rockstar CMO virtual bar and join Chief Troublemaker at the Content Advisory, Robert Rose, for a cocktail and a marketing thought.
To lead us to a fruitful America, to a peaceful world for mankind everywhere, is the great senator from the state of Massachusetts, John F. Kennedy.
Beaming Roberts, what are you drinking?
Oh my goodness gracious! You have brought the American politics to the bar. It's hard to believe, but look, here we are. We're in a looks like some sort of political. Like there's voting machines going on here. There's people screaming and stump speeches happening. It's like a whole political convention in here. It seems. I have no idea what you're going to find for sounds for this online, but yeah, it's quite the political storm. I like it. Bringing all the nonsense of the U.S. to the U.K.
Yes. Well, I mean, the thing is American politics has become such a joke. It's now just a theme in bars.
That was well said. That should be a thing, right? That should be a thing. Is that American politics have become such a joke that it's the Thursday night themes. Isn't there Thursday nights, right? That's the big pub night in London. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That should be the Thursday night theme for some of the pubs there. It's like American politics night. Come in and get hammered, basically.
Yeah, and all the stupid stuff. Yeah. All right. So let all the hubbub of the politics die down and let's look at the drink that you're making for us tonight.
We are going to continue our little tour through rye whiskey that we started last week, which is, and it's only because I have a bottle of it, so I'm trying to go through the bottle of it.
Basically, nice problem to have.
It's a really good problem to have, and I'm enjoying my nice bottle of rye and finding new ways to make campaigns with it, but, you know, cocktails with it, cocktails for campaigns in the pub, as the theme goes. Anyway, we are going to have a wonderful cocktail here, very similar to last week, but very different, of course, which is it's called a Boothby. And a Boothby is the history of it comes from the Prohibition era.
Yes.
And it's ostensibly just a Manhattan with champagne added to it. And I know that sounds really weird, but it actually really, really works. Unlike last week when we talked about the Algonquin Hotel, this one is West Coast sourced. It started in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And basically, the Boothby is you really just take two parts of rye whiskey. and, you know, your favorite rye, whatever it is. A little bit of sweet vermouth this time, a little bit of sweet vermouth, and then a little bit of bitters, again, very much like a Manhattan, and then a little bit of champagne. So it's about half, you put in half, like if you put in 2 ounces of rye whiskey, you'll put 1 ounce of champagne. Or if you put in 1 ounce of whiskey, you'd go with a half ounce of champagne, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a half part of champagne. And it really works. It's just a lovely, lovely drink. Put that into a, now here's the thing.
You don't shake that.
It's, well, here's what I do. Because you mix it like a Manhattan, where you would put all the drink, put all the ingredients except for the champagne into the tumbler, tumble it, pour it into a glass, and then top it with the champagne. Nice. And that way you keep the bubbles going, and you don't ruin the champagne as you mix it up. So it totally works. Trust me, it really works.
And if I recall, you're not a huge champagne fan, so this sounds like a nice way for you to drink champagne.
You could use Prosecco as well. Yeah, you can use, exactly. You know, very much like pineapple juice, you're throwing pineapple juice into rye whiskey. You're throwing champagne, so you can, you know, champagne is sort of like, meh. But the Prosecco is, you could also use any sparkling wine you could use.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't have to be from the French region. So basically, you know, speaking of idiot, you know, speaking of idiot American things.
Yes. You know, well, it couldn't be more American. Could it be a real rye whiskey in there as well? So,
there you go.
So where are we going to be sipping these very fancy drinks this week?
I think we'll be here on the West Coast. We are having just spectacular weather. This is the best time of year. Basically, mid-March to early April is the best time of year in Southern California. It is cool. It is just coming off winter. The air is clean from all the rain we've had. It's green. The flowers are blooming. It's just absolutely spectacular here. So we can find a spot. We go up a little north, not quite all the way north to San Francisco, but maybe we'll go up north, maybe Santa Cruz or something like that, and sit in the sort of big fields that overlook the ocean and the hills that are right there. And we'll have a couple of these Boothbys as we sit in a bar or a restaurant or something.
Love it. I love it. I love it. And then, of course, as usual with us, and when we get together, conversation turns to marketing. What's the thought for this week?
Well, you know, a little bit like last week, we're going to talk about AI again. And I was struck by, so I was watching this event online on YouTube, these AI folks talking. Benjamin Mann, who is one of the co-founders of Anthropic, was talking about the adoption of AI into companies. And one of the things that I've felt, and I've certainly seen, and it's interesting because if you read the news, you would think we're behind, right? You would think everybody's got AI figured out, everybody's got AI integrated into their, it's the biggest thing that everybody's doing, and it's really the biggest thing that nobody's doing. and so I want people to not feel like they're behind if they haven't got fully integrated AI into their marketing processes, their content process yet, because nobody does, by the way. And the guy at the conference, the co-founder of Anthropic, was basically saying, hey, it's been a, you know, he didn't say it's been a tough go, but what he's been saying is like nobody really has it integrated yet. There's a lot of experimentation going on. There's a lot of like, we don't really know what to do with it yet. We're trying to figure it out, you know, all that. And he basically said, and I thought this was interesting, this is a quote, he said, where he's been really impressed with how the largest companies in the world, and this includes banks and retailers and, you know, all sorts of companies. And he said one large bank that we worked with came to us and said, well, we've been talking to everybody in the company about how they would use generative AI, and we've got 500 different use cases that we want to apply language models to, and we don't know what to do with it. And he was impressed by that. And I said to myself, I went, let's be clear. You walk into a technology provider with 500 plus use cases, that's not just useless. That's counterproductive. I mean, that is just, that's just, you know, 500 use cases for anything is just silly. It's just a wish list, right? It reminds me so much of when you and I were young kids and talking about web content management and email enterprise management and all those software tools where everybody went, ooh, features, that's now our strategy, right? Personalization, ooh, that's a feature. That should be part of our strategy. We sort of bought technology based on the features that it had rather than trying to solve a technology process that we really had. So it comes down to this whole thing of doing more with less, right? And what I mean by that is that, you know, as marketers, we've heard this term, do more with less, you know, it's like a drumbeat for the last 20 years, right? You know, do more with less, do more with less. But here's what I find is that it really depends, you know, as we idiot Americans might say, it depends on where you put the emphasis on the right word, right? And so what are you really doing? Are you doing more with less or are you doing more with less? In other words, are you trying to take less resources that you have and do something with that, right? You know, trying to figure out what you can do. Or are you doing more with, you're, in other words, you're doing more stuff and you require less resources in order to do that more. And it's an attitude. It's a really, it's a really, you know, big thing. And the analogy I often use, it's like, think about, you know, think about it like you're a hotel, right? For example, this is common these days, right? Which is I go into a hotel and they tell me, okay, hi, you know, thank you for your, you know, we're trying to do, your check-in and basically just know for a fact that, you know, and they're telling me this, that basically we're not going to clean your room unless you ask, unless you call us, we're not going to give you new towels. Unless you call us, we're not going to do these things. So if you need anything, just call housekeeping and blah, blah, blah. Where of course that used to be automatic back in the day. And I get it, right? The pandemic has left them short-staffed and they've also discovered that, by the way, if we just ask people, they don't necessarily want it, so we can create a total efficiency. We can do more with less, right? But instead, the communication, the marketing of that is bad. And instead, if they went, hey, by the way, can you tell me which of the 4 days that you're staying here you'd like your room cleaned, and we'll make sure that it happens and blah, 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 and then we'll automatically put your towels in. Then they're getting the same result, but it's a different way of communicating. And that's the real key that we have to learn as marketers is how are we communicating to ourselves, to our teams, to our bosses, the do more with less mantra, especially when we start thinking about how AI can create efficiencies, right? Because if you basically say, okay, we're going to do more with less. In other words, I'm going to cut off all the, you know, people, all my writers and my marketers, because we can do the same thing with AI. That's one way of looking at it, but you'll probably fail, is my point. And or if you say, how do I do more with AI with the people that I have, right? How do I do more with less effort? That's a different equation, and we have to get that straight, because our bosses, and this happened to me, I think I talked about this on the show, where a boss came, I was in a client meeting and the VP said they were trying to do this big project, big owned media thing. It was going to be amazing and creative. And the VP went, hey, can't we just get rid of these writers and just have AI write all this content for this new platform and just do it and be 80% as good? And everybody went, I don't know, maybe. And instead, if they went, well, what if we do all these other new things with AI? Keep the writers we have, but we can do more of that. You know, we can do more derivative content. We can add more enhancement to the content we have. We can write different versions of the blog post, you know, and all those kinds of things, doing more with the same amount of resources that we have. So getting that distinction is really important as we start thinking about AI, about how we're going to do more with less, and really understanding that for our strategy.
Yeah, I love that. Especially as I think that we've identified a couple of times in our discussions about that you really can't leave this thing on its own to do its thing, right? It needs human supervision. It needs an injection of wisdom. I think we were talking about last week. It is a co-pilot, not a pilot, right? So if you're using AI, you are, it's a bit like what I've talked about I'm not sure if it's on this show, but I always think about when people outsource a lot of their marketing to agencies and to third parties, you still need the people, you still need your marketing brain to be in
the business and in the building, right? In order to direct these agencies. And if you, same with technology, same with AI, if you haven't got the right people and enough of them, these things can't replace that.
It's so funny that you mentioned that. It's exactly that, right? Where, you know, here's the funny thing that happens in business. You ask a team, you ask a marketing team, hey, you're going to do this cool, new, innovative thing. What's the first thing they do? They go, ooh, we're so busy. We can't do the cool, new, innovative thing. And you go, great. Well, but you really need to do the cool, new, innovative thing. And they go, okay, well, we'll get an agency to do that. And instead, instead of just thinking for a second and going, okay, if we outsource all the crap that we know, in other words, all the stuff that was like machine, like rote, like we, you know, our search engine marketing and our SEO stuff and managing the website and all the stuff that we do every day, we would make the time to create the cool new innovative thing. So we could do the cool new innovative thing and not outsource it to an agency. It's like rethinking why you're trying to delegate or figure out your work. And that's you know, that's operating from a different mindset as a marketing team.
And I think that that's what we're seeing, isn't it? We're seeing the normalization really of AI as in, oh, actually, this is just another tool. This is just another thing that we bring in. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what we're finding. I mean, we're finding that when we work with clients on getting them ready, all of the use cases that are truly valuable are actually needing net new resources and net new budget to do stuff rather than actually firing anybody, right? And it's sort of like, it gives you a lot of extra capabilities, but there's a lot more new work that needs to get done to make those capabilities a reality. It's a great tool for that, great tool for exponentially adding capabilities, but it's not going to save you any more people.
No, I love it. What a nice way to wind up a nice time in the bar. It's an optimistic view of AI in marketing and not the normal doom and gloom. So that's fantastic.
I love it.
Thank you, Robert. So where can people get content that has been not driven by AI, that has been carefully crafted with wisdom? Where will they find
that? Lovely. That's lovely. Yes, you'll find that at our little website called contentadvisory.net.
Splendid.
Where this article exactly will be up and running. Yes. And you can subscribe to our newsletter there, which is always fun. We call it Lens.
Yes, the Lens. A couple of weeks ago, I included it in our newsletter too. So hope if listeners also read our newsletter, they would have seen your newsletter too. So I'll include links to that in the show notes as well, well as the newly launched robertrose.net, which we talked about last week. I'll include that in the show notes. And when people spin the dial on the interwebs, where else can they find you?
They'll find me on LinkedIn and on Threads. Would love to connect with each and every one of you.
Splendid. And for me, in person, will you be in the bar next week?
Of course, and hopefully voting for somebody. I don't know who. We'll find out.
Yeah. All right, mate. I'll see you then.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you, Robert, for a splendid thought, but maybe not so much for the bar theme. As you know, if you're a regular listener, I have no idea what he will suggest before we record. So how do you make a bar sound like American politics? Maybe a discussion for another day. So that's a wrap on episode 209 of the Rockstar CMO Effing Marketing Podcast. I've been your host, Ian Truscott. Thanks to Jeff and Robert for sharing their insight. You can find links to their work and the things we discussed in the show notes on rockstarcmo.com, along with our blog, newsletter, and all of our previous episodes. And thank you for dropping a dime into your podcasting jukebox, selecting our track and jiving along with us. I'd love to hear from you, so please say hello or drop us a rating or review in your favourite podcast app, or just keep listening. I'm glad you're here. Next week, Jeff will be interviewing me about the book I'm trying to write, and Robert will be back in the virtual bar with a fresh marketing thought. Until then, have a great week, and I hope you join us here next week on Rockstar CMO FM.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.